living proof that fate is real. The strong and the capable will always rise.
He does not control this ship. I do.
Discovery is no longer Lorca's. She is ours.
I'm responsible for forging my own path. We all are.
Welcome home, Michael.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, rerouting the transceivers so I could be anywhere at any time, Cam. You'd never know it.
Very nice. Yeah. And we have a very special guest, wielding a sword and declaring rulership, Penny Daflos.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
You know, and our pleasure.
Yeah, it's been way too long. We had you back on. It was actually the first time you were ever on. We're talking about the best and worst costumes in all of Star Trek. That was actually a really fun episode, so I'd encourage everybody to listen to it. Cam, you'll put a link up on the blog as
definitely,
well.
Definitely, definitely.
That'll be fun.
What do you think of the Discovery uniforms?
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was really interesting, the real world uniforms that we're seeing. I like the textures and all the different stuff. They seem really sophisticated, which you'd expect from like a modern show. But then this parallel universe stuff, love them so much.
Gladiatorial sort of look. Yeah. I'm
digging
that.
They've been super complex and just like a completely different vibe and just really helped set the tone for this alternate universe. I love them.
Okay. Let's dig into a little bit about your thoughts as well, because this is the first time that you've been on the show since Discovery has premiered. So I think kind of the litmus test we always start off with is maybe what is your favorite episode of Star Trek Discovery up until this point?
I don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Okay.
Was it Lethe?
Yes.
Ah.
Which doesn't look like Lethe, but I don't know. I thought the whole figuring out why Burnham, the whole Academy thing, choosing between Spock and Burnham, like just that whole kind of Sophie's choice to me was like, wow.
You like the Sarek stuff. Like,
yes.
That works for you there.
Yeah.
See, when you initially said you don't know how to pronounce it, I thought you were going to say C.V. Pacem Parabellum, which was...
It was one of the two. I took the shot on Lethe because that one's quicker to spit out.
Yeah. And C.V. Pacem is probably one of our least favorite episodes as well, Cam.
No, so. That's no one's favorite episode, so I knew not to say that one.
Yeah. So overall, okay, so that's your favorite episode. What do you think of Star Trek Discovery so far?
I like that... Because I've been going back and watching Star Trek The Next Generation since it's been on Netflix.
Yeah.
And the things that I'm like, I remember things being a lot more sophisticated, a lot more polished than, and clearly like the first couple seasons were different. And I feel like they've just put so much thought into it, just like the level of detail and the way that they've been true to the older series while still modernizing it. You can tell that they put a lot of effort into trying to make things line up without being comical almost. And then I just like the relationships. I like that the people are more realistic, that everybody's not like this perfect image of anything. Like, there are some more curvaceous women and there are some people who aren't conventionally attractive. There's not a ton of makeup. Like, it just seems more believable as a real possible future for humanity. It just felt more real.
I always like it when I'm watching movies and TV shows and it actually kind of reflects society,
right?
You know, and that's one of the things where I see like all these like all white casts in like sitcoms or whatever. I'm just like, I think there's like people of color in the world. Why not reflect that in reality here? So the other thing that I want to jump on here is like you bring up the characters, and I think that's been a constant thread with all of our guests on the show, Cam, is everybody latches on to these characters. And I think that was our big concern is, are we actually going to be interested and invested in the characters on the series?
And it's interesting because very early on, like episodes maybe 1, 2, and 3, there was a lot of fans online saying none of these people are likable. None of these people are likable. Yeah. And as the show's kind of gone through some kind of a little bit of rocky ups and downs, people have said, but I love the characters. So it's ultimately the thing people were the angriest about early on has been the saving grace for some, you know, as the road has continued.
But I also like that this may sound kind of weird, but they're not afraid to show some violence, or they're not afraid to show, whereas before I felt that it was like a really clean family friendly show and it was about like ethical issues or like political stuff or what, and clearly there's a lot of exceptions to that, but I felt like this is so much more gritty,
mm-hmm.
and that is just like a totally different atmosphere, and I really enjoyed that they've done that.
It's you kind of wonder like how many times can they tread the same ground, so mm-hmm. why not kind of do something a little different? So Cam, why don't we mosey on over into a discussion about the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, what is passed as prologue,
which can't help but recall the DS9 episode Past Prologue. Which had nothing in common with this episode.
No, not the strongest DS9 episode.
Well,
but
it's the first Garrick episode. Yeah, that's something.
But and this is the first episode featuring who?
Mirror Universe Landry.
There you go. Okay. Garrick, Mirror Universe Landry. They're pretty much on the same level.
She's my fan favorite.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Yeah, you're a Fandry.
That's
right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So why don't we jump into like our overall theme that goes back to the podcast. And Cam, this is about, I think over the summer, we did one called Take Me to Your Alien Leader. So we looked at people like the Borg Queen, Martok, Gowron, I think even like Kodos, for example.
Hey, are you hyping the next Star Trek Discovery novel?
Well, that's very true. I'm not reading these, by the way.
I know.
But so we were like, would we actually want to, you know, have these people rule us? Would we want like Grand Nagus Rom, for example, leading the way? And so we actually had like a fun draft where we like drafted our particular leaders. And we've got two very prominent options in this episode. We've got one upstart kind of guy, Lorca, who wants to be emperor. And we have one Emperor Georgiou as well leading the way here. So it's kind of a bit of a dichotomy between their two leadership styles. And
right.
I think we can dive in about how oppositional these guys are. In particular, the fact that, well, we were wondering what exactly Lorca's motivation was last week, Cam.
Yeah.
And it appears he wants to rule the world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you feel about maybe the motivation behind one Lorca, Penny? Is it different than, well, it's surely different than what we thought it was maybe 10 episodes back, but how are you feeling about this evil Lorca that we're introduced to? And, well, let's not bury the lead here. He's dead now.
Or is he?
Oh.
This was kind of like the Han Solo getting thrown into the pit and then the whole planet explodes. Like, they were really went out of their way to...
But then with all this mycelium stuff that's happening, was he, like, waved out and transported by accident?
Is he the new Stamets?
he's hanging out with Culber somewhere.
Yeah. They're listening to opera.
That's an excellent point. But what do you think of Mirror Universe Lorca, or I guess the Lorca, the only Lorca we know at this point, as a leader?
As a leader... You know, his motivation is actually separate, because if you're supposed to, you know, buy into this alternate universe, it's just a scramble to the top and a dog-eat-dog world. So it's not surprising that he would want to be at the very top of the heap, right?
Right.
Sorry, no, it's dog-eat-kelpian world.
And imagine like having someone like that leading you. If you were in a tight situation or if you were in trouble, you know that he'd be able to think his way out of it. Whereas I felt Georgiou is more of somebody that you have faith in. Is she as agile of a thinker, or does she just assume she's going to be obeyed and things are going to go her way?
Mm-hmm.
So I think those are just very different leadership styles that they seem to kind of put forward.
We also have the benefit of spending a lot more time with Mirror Universe Lorca than we do with Mirror Universe Georgiou. So we actually know that he is flexible in how he can, you know, convey his leadership style. This is a guy who masked himself for 212 days.
He's doing some math.
Yeah, as a prime universe sort of guy.
Right.
And he did get a lot of people behind him, because it was great when...
Including a lot of the fans.
That's very true, because we had the reaction shots from the bridge crew when they have Mirror Universe Lorca pop... Or no, it was Burnham pop and explained, this is not the guy you think it is. And it looked as if the bridge crew is actually pretty devastated by this.
Yes.
They were believers in this Lorca guy. So I just wonder if he's more of a dynamic sort of leader than one Georgiou is.
Which is weird, because on the show, he was usually in a chair saying, like, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't
that was
exactly...
his catchphrase.
I mean, he did give a couple good speeches, for sure, to really rally everyone, but he never seemed like this huge cult of personality on the ship that we saw. It didn't seem like people were just walking around drinking the Kool-Aid, other than, like, your Landrys.
Well, there was Into the Forest I Go.
Yeah.
This is kind of the
episode. He gives a big speech in that one,
Yeah,
of
he does give a big speech in that one. So I think that was maybe the moment that they're trying to sell there.
Right.
Well, so, Penny, for you, if we're thinking about the captains overall, and let's just think about the Picards, the Siskos, the Janeways. Where is Lorca stacking up in this ranking about maybe characters, not necessarily that you'd want to hang out, grab a beer with, but you find interesting or compelling?
See, it really depends on the setting, I think, because in The Next Generation, like, Picard's the guy that you want because he's intellectual. He's the guy for what's happening in the world at that time. Whereas if you're about survival, if you're at war, I don't know that Picard's the guy I want, because he's not going to be able to negotiate your way out of trouble or into some sort of long-term resolution. Whereas Lorca's the guy that, like, you need a wolf on your side. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's the guy that you want given that setting.
A wolf on your side or the wolf inside?
Oh, wow.
I've got lame references for the rest of the evening, guys. Cam, we know enough about Lorca to we can do a bit of a ranking maybe in a few weeks from now. But overall, this is pretty much the end of this guy's character arc, unless he's now hanging out with Hugh Culber
right.
in the Mycelial Network.
Yeah.
What do you think about him overall at this point?
You know, we made some predictions on a video we did, and we'll get to that maybe at the end of the show, but this week. And there was a lot of polarizing discussion about kind of calling us out about how maybe wrong our predictions were. And I'm actually really disappointed to say that my predictions were mostly right.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to be right. Like, I want the writers to prove me wrong every step of the way. It's way more fun when I don't see it coming. And I was bummed that I really saw all this coming. And it was much more straightforward than I expected.
Right.
And so, like, what is my takeaway of, like, Lorca as a leader? I mean, he was compelling in some episodes, and, you know, he grew some stubble and became an evil guy.
Do you think, this character benefits a whole lot, Penny, from just Jason Isaacs' performance? Is it just kind of, he has this magnetism, if you ask me, but I don't know about your thoughts are here.
I didn't like him at first, to be honest with you. I just found him really off-putting, and just like he was trying to be this like, look at me, fancy captain guy. But he ends up a lot more likable, and maybe partly it's like the leather jacket thing. Like, I don't know. I really like that.
I went out and bought one today, actually.
No, but he ended up, it was like a real transformation for his character, I thought. And in the beginning, I thought he was going to be evil because there seemed to be all these like little winks like, oh, he's not who he seems. But then you end up liking him anyhow. And sometimes you do like the bad guy. And I feel like he's a bad guy that I ended up like rooting for him. And even after what's happened, I'm like, oh, you know, he's still interesting, because sometimes we like the bad guy better than the good guy, don't we? And I feel like that's the kind of character he was.
Well, the bad guys are a lot more fun. Traditionally.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I mean, you could definitely tell that Jason Isaacs was having a blast. But we saw, you know, Michelle Yeoh playing the Emperor in these last couple episodes. She's playing a villain, too. You know, Penny, what did you think of her as a ruler?
I thought she was great. I couldn't get past all those scenes, though, with the He-Man sword. Am I the only one
who
was totally thinking that the whole time?
Too.
And it just, it was to the point that it was distracting, because it's like, how are we still have these trappings of thousands of years ago, and then that's still, I mean, symbolically using that to kill him, like, you know, that did something. But
would Saru be Skeletor in this situation? He kind of has the look.
He does, but he's like kind of a little bit of a fraidy cat in a lot of ways.
He doesn't have the chutzpah to be
so
a
he's
bad
more
guy.
Like Skunkor.
Stinkor.
Yeah, sorry.
But it was like, was that, I swear to God, they copied that straight out of He-Man, that sword.
It looked like, a lot like it. Yeah. No, I agree. But I mean, maybe they've rebooted He-Man at so many points in this, you know, when by the time we get to the 22nd century, 23rd century, that like, that He-Man's fresh in their minds when they're designing that sword.
I keep going back to who I would rather be an underling for within this mirror universe. Emperor, you know, Giorgio or Emperor Lorca. I don't know who exactly. That's a bit of a tough one, because they're both evil, are they not?
And capricious. Like, when she kills all her senior lieutenants in that room there, who presumably are her tightest advisors, just like almost on a whim, I was like, okay, that's bad news.
That's the worst fidget spinner I've ever played with. Yeah.
Was I the only one that got a little bit of whiplash in the treatment of Giorgio between the last episode and this episode?
Well, I would definitely say, what do you mean by whiplash?
In the sense, like, the previous episode, there was nothing likable about that character, really. Like, she was someone who, you know, is a fun villain to watch to a certain degree, but I was never in any way emotionally, you know, impacted by her or wanting to see her, you know, succeed. And then we jump, you know, 37 minutes later, and we're expected to be like, oh, man, we've got to get Giorgio back in power. I hope Burnham can save her. And I think a lot of that just has to do with the fact that they built up the character of Prime Giorgio so much that they want us to love this character. But when you've spent a whole episode showing this character being really kind of revolting, you know, like eating Kelpians and just being really
nasty, disgusting,
and as you said, you know, killing all her people, like, it's tough to suddenly convince me, like, oh, yeah, I want to see her as a hero in this.
Yeah, because at least Lorca, he's loyal to people like Landry. Yeah. They're very loyal to him. I don't know if anybody has any sense of loyalty when it comes to Georgiou at this point. And she even spelled it out. She's, I'm an emperor defeated. I've shown my neck. Nobody's going to be following me at this point. I'd rather die on my feet.
Yeah.
For me, I would probably rather serve under one Lorca than I would Georgiou. And Kim, I have the same issue with you. I like Prime Georgiou a lot. Like, I thought she was a great character. I wanted to have even more time with her. I've even pitched to you the idea of Star Trek Shenzhou. Like, that would be kind of a fun thing. I'm not so sure about Mere Georgiou, though. I just, like you said,
Or is she Prime Georgiou now?
now that she's in the Prime
We'll get
universe.
To that later.
Yeah. There's kind of a difference that we see in, like, these Prime versus, you know, Mere Universe iterations of people. And, look, Mirror Universe Archer, that guy was not like a cool cat that I want to hang out with, but he was fun. You could understand the charisma behind it. With Georgiou, I just feel as if, and Penny, you said capricious, that constant capriciousness really irked me. And it wasn't like I could be having fun as a viewer when I see this kind of very, you know, visceral sort of violence, like, all around. I'm just like, I'm not doing the rah-rah-rah stuff as I would in other Mirror Universe adventures.
Were you rooting for her, though? Because I wasn't rooting for her. I was expecting her to die in spectacular fashion and for Burnham to be kind of re-traumatized, or maybe not, because she could see that this was not a person worth saving. So when she did save her, I was like, are you serious?
Well, and even think about how much this paralleled Battle at the Binary Stars, the second episode, where we have them, both Burnham and Georgiou, go onto the Klingon ship, and there's the battle hand-to-hand combat, phaser fire, what have you. And this is very much, I think, very intentional on the part of the writers here, meant to parallel in this episode what we saw way back when. And, you know, to a certain degree, I think it all comes back around, because there's betrayal once more. Don't you think Georgiou feels very betrayed by the current Burnham about saving her? Georgiou didn't want to be saved.
Yeah.
Oh, she wanted to be a martyr.
Yeah.
Even in her own mind for a few moments before she died. You know, that was...
I don't know. Do you think me or Georgiou's going to be having fun in this Prime universe?
Well, she's the new captain.
All she has to do is grab that Delta out of Burnham's hand that she's been carrying around, and bam.
What does a mirror universe Georgiou do in the Prime universe? She's not in Starfleet, so, like, what is she? Is she just, like, a civilian? Is she opening,
is she another,
like, a
specialist? Like, how do you... I gotta say, speaking of leadership in Georgiou, I found it really strange that she would... Lorca's supporters, she would rather torture them for a year and leave this base of a resistance for when he did come back. Like, it seems to me, like, how long... I mean, just there's the practicalities of how long can a body physically go through that kind of abuse.
Sure.
But also, why would you want to keep your rival supporters around, especially that many of them? Like, wouldn't you transport them out into space like they did with other people? It just doesn't make sense to me that a woman of her intelligence, like, it just seems like such a tactical error. Yeah. I wouldn't want to serve under someone who would do something that foolish.
It's especially, like, they're on her ship.
Yes.
Yes. You know,
they could break through the
She's
decks.
Not the brightest ruler. We never said that.
Yeah.
She's just cruel, right? Like, so does cruel mean a good ruler? I don't think so.
No.
Or a good leader?
I don't think so, no. Yeah, there's definitely a sadism to that character that is pretty grim. So I'm not sure what they're going to do with her now in the Prime universe.
So maybe the three of us, are in agreement here that if it comes between the two of them, our leader, we'd prefer one Lorca?
I guess.
You guess?
Yeah. He gives a good speech.
He gives a good speech. Okay. Cam, we also have the return of Landry, which is notable because you are a Fandry.
Definitely.
We actually...
Hardcore. Died in the wool.
We actually debated last week about... Okay, so the Landry from Context is for Kings.
Yeah.
Is that actually a mere iteration of this character?
Yeah, like Lorca snuck her back with him or something.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Because she was calling the prisoners animals... She seemed to really dig violence.
Yeah. She's really mean-spirited.
She's very mean-spirited.
I've liked her a lot.
I know you have. and so, well, we find out, no, that's not the case. She's just very, very incredibly similar in each universe.
In any universe, Landry's mean.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. She is the one that she didn't have really any redeeming qualities in the Prime universe at all, did she? I didn't like her at all.
Neither did I. Cam was a big Fandry, though.
I was a big fan, yeah.
But that's cool. No judgment, just an observation.
Were you excited to see her back, Cameron?
I was very excited to see this character, but I thought there was going to be a twist that this was the Prime version that he'd kidnapped and then replaced his own lieutenant or whatever, you know, on the Discovery with this Mirror Universe version. And I was like, oh, she's evil too. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
But then where's Prime Lorca? Like, where did the switchover happen?
Well, that's an excellent question.
And, you know, like, this is just such a one of those, a lot happened, but not enough, because we don't know.
I'm thinking about it in what we know from other Mirror Universe exchanges. Is DS9 and the original series, it's been through transporter accidents.
Right.
So this was initially a transporter accident, which means he would have had to have been transported onto the Prime Universe Baran, because we've always seen the transporter works, you know, DS9 to Tarak Nor, Prime Universe, Mirror Universe. We see that in the original series. It goes ISS Enterprise, USS Enterprise. I would have to assume that he was beamed aboard the Baran. And then
Did he get beamed aboard, or did the whole ship transport through? Because I wasn't sure about that from the opening bit.
Well, so he said he was trying to escape from the Baran when it was under attack, right? From the Emperor's ship.
It went through the cloud, and the Baran went through.
No, but remember, it was a transporter accident.
That's what they said, yeah.
They didn't transport the entire ship, right?
Right, yeah. I guess, yeah.
So he would have had to have been transported onto the Prime Universe Baran.
Yeah.
And then the Prime Universe Baran is destroyed, but he makes it out somehow? Is that how it happened here?
I'm a little unclear on this.
Yeah.
I was watching that flashback. I'm like, got it.
Well, spelled it. They did not spell it out. This is just supposition.
Maybe intentionally?
On my part. I don't know.
But also personality-wise, like, everybody else is so different in the parallel universes. How is it that the crew and nobody, there were no red flags at all? Like, it's a bit of a...
Well, Penny, his eyes, you know, is that not a red flag?
God,
shouldn't we all know,
such a...
The biological differences between Terrans and humans?
Like, who knew that aliens could be killed by water? What was that movie? That was the M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Signs?
Yeah. It seemed like a cheap little, I don't know. I know you need some kind of indication just like as a storytelling device, but it seemed like a kind of a cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like the reason that flashback was a little vague was because they were opening the door or leaving the door open for Prime Lorca.
I think Prime Lorca is going to make an appearance. We haven't seen his body floating in, you know, charred up in outer space. So, look, if you got Jason Isaacs on your roster, might as well use it. So, look, he could be held prisoner by Klingons. Who knows? I don't know if that fits into Laurel's plan, which, Ken, you pointed out at the very end of this episode, Laurel's plan, it all worked out. The Klingons won the war after they overshot by 9 months.
My girl Laurel's a genius.
Yeah.
She knew.
First a brain surgeon.
Yeah.
And now the greatest war tactician that ever lived.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. She's who I want as my alien ruler. So.
Okay.
That's one powerful head massage there.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So, okay. Well, let's get into it. He's dead. Lorca's dead.
Yeah.
Penny, I couldn't help but notice a bit of a gasp when the sword, you know, went through his chest. He was impaled. And what was your initial reaction here?
I thought that Burnham was going to have to make the choice.
Mm, right.
Right, for someone that she clearly has not like romantic feelings, but like as she adopted him and just like committed to him as her superior officer. He gave her another chance at her career. So there's loyalty and there's just like those ties there. And so I really thought that it was going to be up to her. So when it wasn't, I don't know if I felt cheated. I don't know how I felt about it, but at the same time, it fit into Giorgio's character. So that made sense. But I couldn't believe that they took it there.
You should have at least some sense of resolution in the fact that Burnham had the chance to kill him.
Yes.
And she said, we would have helped you if you had just told us what was going on. That's what we stand for. So I'm not going to kill
you. Yeah, we would have taken you back to your universe had you asked.
Which I really like that moment.
Yeah, me too.
Because I watched too many movies where people just don't tell the truth, and that could have solved every single problem that happened throughout that movie or TV show. So, I mean, it also kind of, like, supports, you know, these ideals of the Federation that they're living by, which is, although I do like how Lorca called it the cult-like devotion to your Federation, which was a nice turn of phrase there.
Well, this Mirror Universe, you know, four-parter, I think, a decent job in kind of having a theme going for it. Like, a lot of the Mirror Universe stories were just kind of fun one-off episodes. this one actually did want to tackle the idea of what the Terran Empire represents versus the Federation. So I enjoyed that they did that, and they brought it all home at the end with Lorca saying, like, he was able to exploit the Federation quite easily, get leadership of their most powerful ship, and, you know, lead this war back to the Mirror Universe that could have taken over, you know, the Emperor title for himself. Like, the Federation were kind of suckers in all this.
Here's a question for you, though, because you guys obviously know a lot more about this stuff than I do. How much of the story arc do you think they have set at the beginning of the season and they know where things are going to go and which characters are going to keep versus what the fans react to and who they like and who they'll want to bring back because they're just that popular? Like, does Lorca's appeal mean that they'll bring him back even though they didn't intend to, or did they always intend to? I know I'm probably over intellectualizing this right now, but I just really wonder.
I'll share this with you. The Mirror Universe is actually, this was an arc that was set out to actually happen at the very beginning of the season.
When original showrunner Brian Fuller was attached, there was tons of rumors swirling. The Mirror Universe was going to play a major
element. Well, they're not rumors, though.
Well, no.
Been confirmed by the writers that the Mirror Universe was originally going to appear at the very beginning of the season. And then the writers said, no, we want to sit with these characters longer so we can kind of then dive into the Mirror Universe. So they have been planning out the stories for a while. And with regards to fan reaction, I do know for a fact that the writers had, I think, already finished writing all the episodes by the time episode one premiered. So they're just going with their gut at this point. And I think that, like I said, if you got Jason Isaacs and he's enjoying doing this, you're going to be bringing him back. It could be like a, you know, season two, he's in for maybe a 2 or 3 episode arc, which I don't think that's going to be tough to rope him in to do something like that.
Well, Jason Isaacs has signed up to be in Las Vegas this year at the con.
Yeah.
Which tells me he's somewhat invested in the Star Trek community.
Sure, yeah.
Because a lot of major actors, if they did, you know, like a 10 episode arc on Star Trek, would be like, see you later. I'm off to the next job. They wouldn't be showing up the next summer at the Star Trek convention. So I think he's willing to play ball in the future. Mm-hmm. So I think his relationship could continue with it. So we'll see.
Okay. So it's not only just getting impaled. He's actually pushed into the energy ball as well. So and we get to watch him disintegrate. Yeah. A bit of a moon door for all you Game of Thrones fans out there, which was very interesting to see. They're making it clear Mirror Universe Lorca is dead.
Yeah.
This is the end of the character. And guys, we talked a little bit about it before we watched the episode. And I want to evaluate Lorca overall, his story arc, because it's come to an end, essentially, as we know it, this Mirror Universe version. Cam, I wonder if when I go back for another rewatch, I'm going to be wondering what the guy's motivation was, or episode to episode, what he wanted. And I think in dramatic writing, or just writing in general, you always want to ask, what do the characters want? And from...
That's why most Disney movies open with a character singing, like, a I want song.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
It sets the tone, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get Someday My Prince Will Come, or I Just Want to Be King, you know, like these songs set up what these characters want. That's very important.
And why didn't Lorca get a song at the very beginning, Cam?
Exactly. Yeah. Where's Saru's song?
But Lorca is a guy who's introduced as somebody who absolutely hates Klingons. He wants to destroy the Klingons. You know that he wants to win this war against the Klingons. He's got a tribble on his desk. That's how much he hates Klingons. He is recruiting a mutineer because he's going to do anything it takes to win this war against Klingons. This is a guy who has been showing signs of suffering from PTSD over the death of his crew and the destruction of his ship. When his therapist / ex says, you need to take a step back. You need to get away from the ship and go into therapy again. He says, you can't take this ship away from me. You're led in a very clear way to understand what his motivations are. But with this Mirror Universe reveal here, well, no, his motivations these entire time is he wants to become emperor of the Terran Empire, and that's not laid out in any way in the episodes preceding this. And this is why I actually have a lot of difficulty with the character now. As much as I liked him, not because I think he's an awesome dude, but I think he's a compelling character, a lot of what I found really interesting about him is actually just completely dumped at this point. And that kind of, it really does irk me. So I'm going to have mixed feelings on Lorca going forward, unless we have some magic go on with this prime iteration of him that we've yet to encounter.
Yeah, I mean, when we go back and watch old episodes, you're going to look at the Lorca stuff as, where are the clues to set up, you know, the twist? Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I think is kind of fun maybe the first time you go through, but beyond that, I don't know. You know, when we had a group talking with some of our friends from Las Vegas about the twist and what have you, and I said, you know, you look at like the movie The Sixth Sense. That movie works either way, whether you believe he's a ghost or a human in both versions. You can go back and sit there the whole time and think of him as a human. It still works.
Wait, he's dead? I was about to watch it tonight for the first time, Cam.
Sorry, Tyler.
Okay.
But, you know, it doesn't work that way with Lorca. You can't go back and watch these episodes and think of him as a captain. You know, a Federation Prime Universe captain.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work. It doesn't hold together, which to me is kind of a sign that the twist... It's maybe fun in the moment, but it doesn't hold up for kind of long-term storytelling.
Are you going to go back and rewatch old episodes and be like, oh yeah, he wants to be emperor? No, you're not. There's going to be absolutely nothing to indicate that
no,
that's
there's
what
not.
He wants.
All you're doing is now looking for the clues.
Yeah.
That of what they're going to do.
That he's not who he says he is, but that doesn't show you what his actual motivation is.
Right.
And this isn't like me being picky. This is just... narrative storytelling. These are just things that you need to figure out as a writer. And you know, as much as I like Discovery, like I don't want to pick on it too much because I enjoy this episode. I liked it more than the one last week, that 37 minute episode, Cam, that you and I spelled out why we thought was problematic.
Mm-hmm.
I found this entertaining.
Yeah, I thought this was a fun episode,
but it just it changes.
Didn't have the punch though of like Into the Forest I Go.
Oh, yeah. I think that Into the Forest I Go is probably in my upper tier of episodes so far this season. Penny, I know you're not the the episode name specialist. You warned us at the beginning, but that was the mid-season finale, which I think was a pretty fun episode where they had the big showdown with Cole, the Klingon general there. Yeah. So I don't know. Penny, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but... we did discuss this a little bit about like motivation and what characters want just before we started watching this episode. Does this change anything for you when it comes to Lorca, or is it a character that you find it interesting, like what they're able to kind of maybe pull the wool over our eyes just a little bit, and we have to reimagine him in a different kind of light that actually makes it, you know, interesting upon a second viewing?
But this is the thing. I feel like there are two Lorcas because his motivations that we were led to believe at the beginning are different from now. Like this Lorca that we saw in this last episode is especially, I feel like he wants his cake with sprinkles and extra, you know what I mean? Like he wants everything in his life. He doesn't just want to be at the top of the pile and be the emperor. He also wants Burnham in kind of like a really creepy possessive way, but that's like a totally different thing to talk about. But don't you feel like he just wants everything? And that is a lot different than having revenge on Klingons and all this and being like, you know, traumatized. It's really two Lorcas. And that's just why I bring up again, how much of this do you write continuously versus changing your mind or getting fan input? Because I swear there have to be some shows that they look at fan theories on message boards and stuff and they're like, that is better than what we came up with. And so they incorporate that. And this is almost, it almost feels like something like that because it is just such a schism from everything we knew about him before.
Well, this is kind of coming from the J.J. Abrams school of thought when it comes to like mystery box storytelling where you've got like, and it's not actually, I like J.J. Abrams a lot, but the whole mystery box aspect of a lot of the TV shows, I think Westworld is probably the most notable issue there, but it's as if viewers are looking at these narratives as problems to solve.
Right.
Where they become like Reddit detectives and figuring things out. And that's not what compels me to watch a show. To me, it's the conflict between characters. It's the compelling storylines that are going on. It's this emotional investment that I have here versus figuring out the puzzle.
Right.
And this was a bit of a, you know, we've got the Ash Tyler stuff, we've got the Lorca stuff, and it's again back to this mystery box sort of storytelling that, look, I thought the Ash Tyler and Burnham, like, showdown in her captain's quarters, I thought that was one of my, like, highlights of this entire season.
Yeah,
I thought
I
that
agree.
Was fantastic. So, yes, maybe it's worth it in those situations, but you wonder if...
Weirdly enough, that was the twist that we had the most doubt about. Like, we were going on and on about Ash Tyler as a character.
Yeah.
And I got way more fireworks out of the Voke Tyler reveal and all that sort of stuff than I did about the Lorca stuff.
Yes, same with me. And, well, Penny, let me pose this to you. What if they had just, you know, clued the audience in on everything that was going on from the get-go? What if we knew right from the beginning that Voke and Tyler were the same dude? What if we knew that Lorca was actually from the Mirror Universe? They do it in a very delicate way where it's not just like beating you over the head with exposition. What if we know something I guess the characters don't know? Would that be less compelling to you or more compelling?
I don't know. I like being surprised. And I, like, intentionally for this entire series, I have avoided reading any recaps, theories, anything, because I used to be that person for a lot of shows and like Game of Thrones and stuff. But there's something to be said for, and maybe I'm just getting old, I don't know. There's something to be said for just going along with the ride. And it's almost just like having a conversation with someone new without knowing anything about them. It's one of those things, like, let's just, like, let things happen and just let the story wash over you, as opposed to trying to be that detective.
Yeah.
Like, you, I think you lose something in that, so I like those surprises. And the gasp, I'm sorry, that was like a, but it was just such a weird, like, the He-Man sort of all things. Like, that's, I think it was kind of amazing and kind of cheesy at the same time, so.
The other thing that's risky about, you know, revealing it to the audience, though, is then you think that all the characters around these people are really dumb. Like,
it's true, but you know, you're taking it really back to a fundamental theory Hitchcock had about the idea of surprise versus suspense. And you know, he would say, if you have characters in a room and there's a bomb in the room, if they don't know the bomb's there and it suddenly goes off, you get a surprise. It's brief, you get 3 or 4 seconds. Whereas if the audience knows the bomb's there, they're sitting there waiting to see what happens. And they know something the characters don't. And so I wonder how much fun it would have been if you had, say, like a Lorca who's, you know, the Mirror Universe version, and the, and we know, we find out maybe a few episodes in, and we're watching him cover his tracks.
Yeah.
We're getting, you know, he's making some mistakes, and we're like watching as he's trying to cover up, and we watch characters start to clue in. I wonder if that would have been more satisfying narratively versus a one episode, like, boom, there it is. Yeah. And then one more episode and he's dead.
Can you imagine if the first 3 seasons of Breaking Bad was just the White family wondering where their dad was all the time? And then, boom, season 3 premiere. I've been a drug dealer, guys.
Yeah. Right, right.
But it's like The Fall. Like, have you guys seen that show? That, you know, at the very beginning, that he's a serial killer, and it's just about the cat and mouse game. It's not trying to find out who the killer is.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason that there aren't a lot of shows that they lay it all out like that and build that suspense, because I think it's actually really hard to do and to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think sometimes you need a bit of a mix, because we knew that something was going on with Tyler.
Yeah.
Like, we knew. And even Lorca, like, there were just little things early on that I'm like, is he a bad guy?
In his first episode, he's acting
winks
crazy. Yeah.
To the audience, that you're just like, there's something weird going on here, but not like this kind of weird.
Yeah.
And with those kind of motivations, like, I just thought that he was like some subversive element. I don't even know what I thought, but this was like a big shock. So I don't mind that. I think there was a little bit of suspense with a shock that I kind of like.
So I think we feel a little mixed on this and what it you know, spells out for this character. Overall, I enjoyed this guy's journey.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was a compelling character, fantastic actor. I think we'll probably see the actor pop up at least a few more times within, as long as Discovery's on the air. So why don't we, I think the next most important thing to talk about here is the future of the command of Discovery here. And I think Choose Your Pain was a very important episode. This is the one where Lorca was actually kidnapped by the Klingons and tortured. We got the Harry Mudd introduction as well as the Ash Tyler introduction. And throughout the episode, we have Saru in command. And he doesn't really seem totally fit for command, or he's having some growing pains until the very end of the episode, and he's really come into his own. I think the last, like, 3-4 episodes have been, like, just showcase moment after showcase moment for making the point that I think Saru should be in command by the time season 2 premieres.
Yeah.
Like, what are you guys, Penny, what are your thoughts over on Saru at this point?
I, at first, didn't like him. I thought he was really irritating, and just, like, the way that he was picking on Burnham, it was starting to get, I mean, she deserved the criticism and a rough ride, but then it felt like a little bit much. So now, like, he called her his friend, didn't he?
Yeah.
In one of those transmissions there. And at the end of this episode, it felt less like he was trying to be in charge and more just like being the conductor for the orchestra, as opposed to trying to tell everybody how to play each instrument, if that makes any sense. And I think he's grown into the role. So had you told me at the start of the season that he's going to end up needing to be in charge, I would have been like, okay, I'm writing off this show. But now I actually don't mind it. And the crew seems to be behind him. So he's grown into the role for sure.
Well, when he gives his big speech about how, you know, this is our Discovery and this will be her maiden voyage, you can see how they're kind of pivoting the series in a sense to kind of be the classic Star Trek we all know. Mm-hmm. Like, going forward, whoever captains that ship, it's going to be more of the traditional values we saw on Star Trek on a ship versus what Lorca's ship was like.
Well, maybe that's why I was kind of pitching Star Trek Shenzhou, where, like, that's kind of the series that I liked, where they're going around fixing relay stations or opening wells for crab aliens.
Only Tyler wants this show.
You know what? Why not do a web series, though? Like, or some sort of, like, you know, 10-minute episodes on YouTube or something, like, in between seasons. Like, that's what's so amazing now is you can have little spinoffs without the commitment of a whole series. You could do some really creative stuff without having to invest in, like, a whole big machine, right?
So, with regards to Saru being in command, I think a lot of people are assuming that this is going to be a redemption show about Burnham. And this main character, by somehow, some way, by the end of season one, maybe she would be reinstated in Starfleet, and she'd even get a shot at the big chair herself.
Yeah.
I think this is setting up more like, redemption arc for Burnham, definitely. No doubt. But it's going to be her serving under one Saru. Like, I think...
Will she be the first officer?
Well, and that's a good question, because there's two things I was thinking about here. Either, like, the science officer... Mm-hmm. Or else she'd be number one, because I think Arium is second in command after Saru officially. So
why can't we get more screen time for Arium?
Well, was this not a showcase for a lot of those, like, kind of behind, well, not behind the scenes, but the lower deck sort of characters?
No Milton Richter, though.
I actually was looking out for Richter, and I was like, Richter's not in the engineering lab. What's this all about?
he was blending into the wallpaper too much.
But we got Reese, Bryce, we had Detmer had some lines. We had Arium get, like, the most, like, screen time she's ever had as well, so... I don't know. I'm liking how they're, at least for this very one episode, they're expanding kind of the depth of the lower deck sorts of crew members on this ship as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. So Saru in command. I like this idea a lot more than I did 10 episodes ago.
During CV Pacum Parabellum.
But the writers are clearly, they don't have a lot of loyalty to their captains. So how long is Saru going to be in there?
Especially
right? Like, it's just been this turnover ongoing, right?
Doug Jones could be Academy Award winner Doug Jones in maybe a few weeks. Although he's not winning the actor. He's not nominated.
Unless he storms the stage and steals the award.
I know. They'll probably let him stand up on stage
if the movie wins,
Shape of Water becomes, Best Picture.
Yeah.
So I think Doug Jones is probably... I think he likes being on Star Trek.
Yeah.
This is a guy who can... Like, he's got such a high profile. He can do anything he wants.
He's been a working actor, though, all his entire career.
Yes.
A gig like this is good.
I think if you can get it. Yeah. I think he's down to stick around. And I like the idea of Saru being in command. I've actually... Ken, before this came on, I kind of pitched... and I think you and I discussed this. Like, why hasn't Star Trek had an alien captain yet?
Mm-hmm.
But Penny, you actually bring up something that I never thought about. What if they dispatch the captain every season? What if that's kind of the conceit of Star Trek Discovery? It's like, new season, new captain. Like, it could just lend itself to a lot of, like, funny stories or interesting stories.
It's hard to build a brand, so I don't know that they would do that, but they've already been breaking so many rules already. Like, even the bloodshed, like, the goriness of the last few episodes.
Klingon nudity? Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's got quite explicit with a bunch of different stuff, and then, like, the way that, I don't know, just, like, the whole, like, Burnham-Lorca relationship in this, like, it's just, like, not very cool, just from the sounds of it. He's like, well, I want you anyhow, and all that kind of attitude. They've just broken a lot of the rules or the conventions that we had from Star Trek before.
Well, Burnham made it very clear, you can only have my mind.
Nothing more.
Yeah, but she was picking up on that rapey vibe, too. Yeah. And so that's not... I'm just saying that that's something you never would have had before.
Well, they literally used the word groomed last week, which, like, Cam and I both gagged. We're like, oh, my God. Like, this guy, it's not just that he's an evil dude. He's a sexual predator. And
I don't blame the writers for taking that tact with that character. But I'm sure when, this Me Too moment broke and everything, they were like, oh, this was poor timing. I don't hold that against, the show
or
in any way.
Is it good timing to say that this
happens? It opens up for conversations,
and it keeps
for sure.
happening even in the future, even in all sorts of stuff. I think that we would be naive to think that we're actually ever going to put those power dynamics behind us, let's face
true.
It. Especially in this parallel universe where everybody is so ruthless.
Sure.
Why wouldn't you take advantage of anything that you could to get what you want, which seems to be Lorca's big thing? He wants everything.
My biggest fear, though, is Cam, you and I, we discussed this on our last video, and a lot of people were disagreeing, saying, like, no, what if the Emperor is just lying about this grooming comment? And I was like, it's going to be the worst timing ever if during the Me Too movement you're told, you should not believe a woman when she's telling people about sexual misconduct. I mean, and so that was my biggest fear going into this episode, is it would be revealed that, no, Lorca's not a sexual predator after all.
Right.
This is the first captain we've had who's a sexual predator, which is...
Well, he said he had a lot of women and he couldn't remember them all. I don't think that was like a exaggeration either. The part that creeped me out, though, was that he was a father figure.
Oh,
and then, like, that is a lot more than it's just like gross on a lot more levels than just being like, you know, a douchey boss. Like this, sure. That is like really gross and creepy. Yes. And you almost forget about that when you see that, because he clearly loves her, but then you're like, ew, you were a father figure and you right. Love her. Like, this is not working.
And there's a level of obsession in his eyes.
Yes. That, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's because of the light, Cam.
He just can't keep his eyes open.
He's squinting a lot in her direction.
That's his move, I guess.
But again, that was like a complex thing that, like, you can see. It was very Game of Thrones to me.
Sure.
Like, and just like that level of complexity that you wouldn't have seen even 10 years ago, I think, in TV storytelling.
So, guys, we found ourselves thrust back into our side of the Alpha Quadrants in this Prime universe. The Klingons have won the war. First question, I think the most important thing, are they going to turn the dimmer switch back up now that Lorca is no longer in command?
I would have to imagine so. I can't picture Saru taking over that ready room as it is. He's definitely turfing out the Gorn skeleton. And all the weapons.
Yeah. I wonder where they go from here, though. Like, we only have two episodes left to wrap everything up that they've, you know, kind of set out for the season one arc, this Klingon arc.
Right.
I don't know what... How are they going to do that in two episodes, guys? Do you think it's like, possible?
Okay, here's the thing that bothered me about like those last couple of minutes. Parallel universes, I'm totally down with that. Like, very believable. I think
sure. The
time travel thing now, like, now are they going to travel back in time and fix things so it doesn't all start? Like,
that's what made me groan. That, yeah. I was just like, oh, really? It comes back to like... The story that we're going to get next, it's not about reconciling internal conflict amongst the characters. It's about we have a problem that we need to solve.
Because can you think of any other way to solve this problem other than time travel?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
And maybe they'll surprise us, but that's just why I thought that was a really weird direction to take it in. Yeah. I can understand if they'd been missing for a month and it just ratchets up the tension because they're not there and blah, blah, blah. But 9 months and then like that little war map.
Right.
That was like all of a sudden, that was a little bit cheesy, but I did find it eerie that there was no communication, no, you know, automatic signal or whatever it was that they called it. That's pretty eerie.
It reminded me of the episode Zero Hour from Enterprise, where they go back to Earth and it's the wrong timeline. They're like, there's no messages from Starfleet.
There's space Nazis.
Yeah.
That's actually a trope that you used in Past Tense as well, Part 1 on Deep Space Nine. And I think we even may have gotten that on Star Trek First Contact when they went through and followed the Borg. And they're like, oh, we're in 2063, I believe. So,
and were those episodes solved by time travel? I'm assuming that they were, because I don't know how else.
Yes.
Every single one. Time
so then it just seems to be like a bit of a cliche almost now when they've been so innovative in their storytelling. So I'm hoping that they've got something up their sleeve to surprise us.
Yeah, Harry Mudd's got time crystals up his sleeve. Oh, yeah. Literally.
You know what bums me out too is that because and we talked about this a lot on the show, the Klingon War, there was not a lot of momentum to what we saw on the show in terms of this raging Klingon War. When last we were with the Klingon War, they'd taken down the flagship, killed Kahl. And so we're like, okay, well, I guess that kind of wraps that up. And now we're like, nope, the Klingons won the war. And it's like, well, if I had a better sense as to the forces they had and what sort of ground they were gaining, this moment would make more sense to me.
The only thing that I will say in their defense, though, is that Lorca was adamant, and again, this calls into question his motivation. He's like, we need to get back because we have the cloaking codes. And so it was, and so he was, you know, emphasizing... you know, the tension there in that they really desperately need to get back into their own universe and help win the war. So I don't, maybe if they don't involve time travel, maybe what we need is all these Federation ships that still exist. Like, they just need to get the cloaking codes and start shooting up some Klingon ships. I don't know. Like, I'm still very confused about just like you said, Cam, the sheer scale of this Klingon war that's, you know, it lends itself to a couple photon torpedoes every second episode.
It was very strange. Huh. Very strange. I just wanted to take you a little bit back to the Mirror Universe just for a second. I was just curious what you guys thought of the mycelium network connecting the entire universe where it was going to ruin everything.
Oh, the stakes were high.
The stakes were almost ridiculously high.
How do you go back from that where, like, you literally find out in episode, 13? Of Star Trek Discovery, we're saving the universe. You know, this is usually a series finale sort of a deal that you've got to deal with. So I just wonder if they raise the stakes a little bit too high. Very much how I think it goes back to Fast and Furious franchise, Cam.
Of course, as all things do.
The first movie, it's about them...
it's about family.
That's true. But it's about them stealing a shipment of combo DVD videotape VCRs, right? Yeah. Players. And then by the last one we watched last year, Cam... it's about them averting
nuclear war.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Avengers, right? Like, it's like, who's going to threaten the universe now? And there needs to be like a whole new, the stakes are even higher.
Exactly. Right. And so I'm just like, so what are the stakes going to be next year?
Right.
And the year after that, if we already hear, we need to save the entire universe.
I was actually kind of hoping the Mycelium Network was going to be completely torched by Mirror Universe damage, just because to me, it's so magical that I have a hard time wrapping my head around it. It turns into one of those things they can always use for convenience.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand it.
They got to shut this thing down by the end of the season one, right?
I would
The mycelium stuff?
Yeah. I'd assume so.
How else do they travel, though? That's like the whole thing for how they can...
They've got warp. They're traveling by warp to go meet the Charon.
But just these, like... getting there in time and just all these challenges of space, or even with warp speed. I thought that that was part of why they were able to get there in time and do all sorts of different stuff that they couldn't do before.
That's what made Discovery special. But yeah. I mean, this network was not around when Kirk and, you know, crew were around in 10 years.
Okay, so my husband has a theory about that. He thinks that the way that the war is going to end is that they're all going to agree to give up a whole bunch of technology in order to, like, you know, ratchet down tensions. This is just, like, his thing. It's almost like nuclear disarmament.
Sure.
Like, the mycelium, like, all of this technology, they're going to say, let's torch it all so that we go back to a simpler time when we can't, you know... put the whole universe at risk with this level of technology.
That is the first time I've heard that theory, and it actually makes a lot of sense.
And so then it would line up with how we start out with Star Trek being
right.
Not quite Stone Ages, but like way behind what we see right now.
Sure.
I like this theory like 10 times more than like the spore drive got broken, so we never used it again.
Right, yeah.
You know, like, this is actually, like kind of an armistice sort of deal.
Exactly.
You
know, a mutual disarmament kind of thing. Yeah.
I really like this. Your husband's a smart chap.
Yeah.
We'll get him on the podcast.
He really should. He's a smart dude. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Wow, I'm kind of blown away by that one because, I was looking up ways. Like, when they said this whole thing was infected, my theory was, going off of the last episode, Vaulting Ambition, that they were going to make one final jump. It was going to burn up whatever they had left, and that was kind of the gist of it. But then they introduced in this episode that that'll like wipe out the entire universe. And I was like,
I found that to be a little bit of a heavy-handed way to say we need to respect the Earth. Pollution is bad. You know,
there was a conservation message.
It's just heavy-handed. Like, I totally get what they were going for. But yeah, this early in the season and to have this message that it was just a little bit blunt for my taste because they have been so clever with so many other things.
You know, though, we've had these very blunt conservation messages because we also had that in the episode CV Pack on Parabellum with the Povans where, you know, they went down and there was like the spirits of the trees communicating with them. So this has kind of been an ongoing thing of very heavy-handed conservation messages.
I'll be honest, it's pretty easy to do nowadays.
Sure.
You know, they can expand their horizons a little bit.
For sure.
I have nothing against conservation.
No.
I recycle.
Save the whales.
Save the whales. You know. Yeah. Or no, as Nelson Muntz would say, nuke the whales.
Right.
Gotta nuke something. okay. So one last note here, at least for me. We saw that green spore floating in the engineering lab, landing on Tilly's shoulder, and then disappearing into her uniform.
Yeah.
What does this mean, people?
She's the next traveler.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that means.
Is that the key to time travel in Discovery now?
It was also green. I thought most of the spores were kind of like a whitish blue, so that was kind of unusual.
Yeah. I don't get it.
Do you think Tilly plays a major role in this wrap-up to the season?
Maybe Captain Killy's consciousness is in this, and she's going to come back in full force in season two, guys.
Fans would not be against that.
No. And I couldn't tell if it was just more of a visual storytelling device, because for me, I feel like part of what I've also enjoyed about this series is it has been more cinematic than a TV show. And I thought that there were a lot of shots actually in this particular episode, like that when Burnham's in that black corridor and it's all shiny, like that is straight up. That's a cinematic shot. That's not a shot you get in a TV show. And then when they were on that planet, too, with the, like all the trees and stuff like that, that was just like a very, is just like a just different ethos, different way of storytelling. So I wasn't sure if that little green thing was just a storytelling device, that this stuff is everywhere and look, here's one example, or if we're supposed to read more into it.
I think you're supposed to read more into it because of the fact like Tilly doesn't kind of like look at it like, ah, and look at it and acknowledge it as it kind of touches her.
Say that sound again.
But, you know, the fact that it was shown in a way where the character doesn't really know this happened indicates to me something's going to happen because of it. It was way too emphasized, and the character was not in on it.
And Tilly's another character that I started out really finding her annoying, and I was like, oh, God, every TV show has that annoying character. She's going to be the Jar Jar Binks that everybody hates because she's nah, 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 nah.
Right.
But I actually quite like her, and she's grown as well. And just she's another one of those just like really real characters that I've really enjoyed.
Well, I like they've made her good at her job as opposed to just kind of a spaz. Because Jar Jar Binks was never good at his job.
No,
you never saw him as a senator, though, did you?
Look how that went down.
Ah. Yeah, actually, a couple years later.
We did see him.
The entire collapse.
He was the one that like was the one the one vote of confidence that put Emperor Palpatine in charge.
He was an awful senator, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Oh, okay.
Poor Jar Jar.
We're so Jerusalem. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But was there anything we want to kind of talk about as sort of tying up this sort of story arc? What did you guys think of this episode? Was this... You know, we saw four Mirror Universe episodes. Where did this one kind of... Was this as strong a finish as a start?
No. Okay. I like the start more than the finish to this Mirror Universe. I think the initial introduction to the Mirror Universe is actually a lot of fun. Although, Cam, you and I, we noted that it took a long time for that episode to get going. And then I really like The Wolf Inside because of the Ash Tyler stuff, the reveal.
There's something you never thought you'd say.
I know, which is crazy. So I actually think those first two episodes are a lot stronger than the last two. This wraps up the Mirror Universe, but to me it felt like more like tying up loose ends that they knew that they had to do narratively. But Penny, what are your thoughts on this Mirror Universe arc we've had for four episodes?
I really enjoyed it, and I actually really liked that first episode, you know, when Tilly has to be like made up and then she's got this uniform and it's like ba-boom and like everything's... I thought that was a really cool introduction and just like a real visual just kind of splash, you know, to immerse yourself in that. I just... this whole Giorgio thing, I just can't get over. Where are they going to go with this? It just seems like... Not that they painted themselves into a corner, because clearly they've done it for a reason, but it's so... it just doesn't make sense. And I know Burnham's impulsive, but like, come on.
I think it's pretty clear where it's going. She's gonna open a restaurant serving Kelpians.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what she's gonna do in the Prime Universe. I honestly don't know. And so that's actually an opportunity for the writers to surprise us, I think, because it doesn't seem like obvious what the rest of her storyline has in store.
Do you think that this character is going to stay in the Prime Universe like long term, or is this going to be send her back home at some point down the road?
I don't get it, because when the Mirror Universe was introduced in the original series, nobody had any idea what was going on.
Yeah.
So you would think, you know, word gets around about this Mirror Universe, especially...
And Giorgio was known to be dead.
Exactly.
She can't just easily take her place like Lorca seemingly did.
Yeah, she'd be a contemporary of Kirk's.
Yeah.
So he would hear if one of his fellow captains has a body double waltzing around the galaxy.
And do you think Emperor Giorgio could just go, you know, persona non grata in society?
She would go start a farm on Bajor like we saw in that other Progress from Deep Space Nine Season 1. I don't know. I'm
curious. Like, I'm really...
She can't go back.
She can't go back.
She can't.
So...
I'm just very curious to see what they do with her, because I think it's an interesting twist, and I did not see that coming. So, I'm all for it.
Maybe
it'll be like Khan. They'll drop her on a planet.
Because she's always wanted to be a pastry chef.
Right.
And, you know, this is her way to, you know, realize her dream just as an anonymous pastry chef. It could be one of those things that she ends up living an anonymous life that part of her always wanted. There's ways to get rid of her, but then why bring her into the Prime Universe in the first place?
You know what? I wonder if it's going to have to... she's going to help tie up this Klingon war. If this is going to be maybe a redemption arc on the part of the Emperor where she has to sacrifice herself for some reason to help defeat the Klingons somehow.
Or maybe the ruthless instincts and the insight that she had in this parallel universe is what it's actually going to take to defeat the Klingons.
Well, and let's think about it, because... A big plot point at the very start of the season was that she was on the Klingon sarcophagus ship, and she was the one that killed T'Kuvma. It wasn't Burnham, right?
It was Burnham, I thought.
Oh, okay. It was Burnham as well.
Okay.
Or at least that's what all the flashbacks are.
Burnham shot him with a phaser.
Okay. Well, but Giorgio, she was involved with that, you know, fight aboard you know, the sarcophagus ship. I think maybe it's going to come full circle with her having something to do with the Klingons in these final two episodes of the season.
It would make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that Michelle Yeoh is signed up for the long term.
I don't. I think this is a one season deal.
I think so.
Yeah. She might make an appearance in like a holodeck or something. I don't know.
Sure. Don't know. Giving away another telescope.
Yeah. Cam, any final thoughts on this one?
Yeah, like I thought the first two episodes of the Mirror Universe were like really strong.
Yeah.
I was fully on board this arc with these first two episodes. Vaulting Ambition really shook me where I was like, oh no, like this was not a good episode. Like they kind of went from like, we'll say like A minus B plus for the first two part episodes to like a C episode.
Right.
And I thought this was kind of like a B, B minus sort of episode where like it wrapped up the loose ends. It's like, okay, that's the end of Lorca. I can't say it was done like where I was like, wow, what a finale. Like I did with like Into the Forest I Go, but it did its job.
Well, a lot of it is like I kind of... Nothing surprised me too much.
That's
about
the
this
thing.
Episode.
Like I was surprised watching Into the Forest. I go.
Yeah,
I did not
here.
Expect that.
Yeah.
Versus this one, you know, it's funny. I was way more compelled by the death of Cole than a character I've been following for 10 episodes, Lorca.
Yeah, I don't know why that is. Is it just because we kind of know intellectually, like this is the end of the road for the character? Like, where do you
Maybe.
Go from here if it's revealed he's evil?
Yeah.
You know, I did not actually expect him to die in this episode. I actually thought that no matter the reveal that he's evil, I still think, you know, Lorca would have been around until the end of the season. So that did surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I guess I'm cynical. I don't think that they're going to find a way to bring him back because Georgia was not, she was supposed to be dead too. And all of a sudden she's back now. So I just feel like we haven't seen the last of him.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey guys, Cam, why don't we segue on over to some... Well, it's going to be tough to do our usual listener mail because we have more than we've ever received before. So instead of kind of combing through... So for people that did not check out our video this week, we got more comments on that one than any other video we've posted. And
views.
And views, yeah. So I think maybe what we want to extract, though, is maybe just like some general ideas, some common threads that a lot of the people were bringing up within the video this week. So what stands out to you, sir?
I mean, there was a lot of debate in the comments on this video where we kind of talked about last week's episode, and we're just talking about sort of the ramifications of the Lorca character being presented the way he was. I mean, a lot of the comments were calling us out on essentially taking the Emperor's word and that Lorca was...
Hashtag me too.
Right, yeah. And ultimately, we were proven right, I guess, on that one. And I'm not, like, rubbing that in. It's just, it seems like I think a lot of fans were holding out hope for a curveball.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's, I think, says a lot about Jason Isaacs and maybe how well... I don't know that I would say the Lorca character has been written spectacularly well, but at least it's been presented well in a way where, you know, the audience was on board with him to a certain degree.
Which is interesting when you think about how he was introduced and everybody was saying, like, this is not a real Starfleet captain. Like,
right.
So it's interesting to see how much the audience has swung around since then.
Yeah. Another point that was raised was that the character of Lorca, you know, you referred to him, you specifically said he was irredeemable at this point. Which I think would prove true in this episode. But...
Although and I'm not going to debate anybody's religion. I respect everything, but a very religious man condemned me for implying that anybody could be beyond redemption.
Right.
Oh,
and
dear.
I know for a fact I'm not going to change anybody's mind about religion in a YouTube comment. So I just said, I agree to disagree. So
right.
Wish you the best, sir.
But there was many a people brought up the fact that this character would be redeemed through Prime Lorca.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting point.
In that I can understand what they're saying in that, like, it's not this actual specific character, but more the memory or the legacy of the character can be redeemed through a return of the Prime Universe Lorca, where maybe he's cleaning up the mess to a certain degree, or we recognize, it's almost that reckoning that Burnham was talking about last week, that reckoning with Giorgio. It's not the same person, but there can still be some reckoning going on.
Yeah, so. For sure. I mean, I think... I would be curious to know if that will be the leg. I don't think the legacy of Lorca will be whatever comes from the Prime Universe Lorca, though, because assuming Jason Isaacs doesn't come back for multiple seasons or something as this Prime Universe Lorca, like he may get a couple episodes. But I don't know that he's going to have, in those two episodes, enough impact to kind of rewrite the legacy of what the Mirror Universe Lorca has done.
Yeah.
Like, people may walk away being more positive on Prime Universe Lorca, but Mirror Universe Lorca steered the ship, you know, for the first 10 episodes of this series, or whatever, for 13 episodes. So, you know, I think that's... I appreciate their optimism, and I think in Star Trek, you want that optimism.
Oh, well, that's profound, Cameron.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, we'll be doing more videos in the coming weeks. This one turned out, I think, way more popular than we ever imagined. But jump on over to our Facebook at facebook.com/subspacepod for more of that, as well as blogs. Tyler, what did you talk about last week?
Yeah, you know, I went back into the Mirror Universe, and I compared last week's Vaulting Ambition to Shattered Mirror from Deep Space Nine. And Cam, I think you were really the inspiration for that, because you brought up Jennifer Sisko during the podcast.
I do that all the time.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, there's these mommy issues going on with, of course, Emperor Georgiou's introduction. And I actually went back, and Cam, you and I were not always a big fan of Jennifer Sisko, the actress.
Right.
But this is actually a very strong Jake episode, in that, like, you understand why Jake is so compelled to have a relationship with a woman who he intellectually knows is not his mother. He's a smart enough young man to get that, but it doesn't matter. Like, her hands feel like his mom's hands. She talks like her. You know, and so it's kind of a fascinating journey for Jake, which I didn't really think would be the case, because it's been a while since I watched this one. And it's fun pulling out the parallels between these two episodes that we saw. So I'd recommend, of course, I'm going to recommend it because I wrote it. But go find the link on our Facebook page. That's at facebook.com/subspacepod. Cam, you had a fun one this week as well.
Yeah, so I compared Vaulting Ambition to the movie Inception. And there was a few interesting little movie homages strewn throughout that episode. Like, I considered doing sort of a Silence of the Lambs discussion with the Laurel talking to Saru stuff. But I ultimately went with the Inception stuff because it was more fun. It's tied to the Stamets-Culber encounter in the mycelial network. And the idea that it's sort of this dream situation where they're going through grief, just like Leonardo DiCaprio did with his wife. Now, the wife was more of an antagonistic figure than Culber proved to be. But there's interesting threads throughout that kind of tie the two things together, as well as the use of music in both cases, and the idea that music marks how to escape from this situation. So check that out, on the Facebook page. So next week we'll be back with coverage of the penultimate chapter in the Season 1 Discovery story, The War Without, The War Within. So until then, you can find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in very proud to be a Fandry, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in New Groove, comma Emperor Georgiou's. Penny, where can we find you online?
I'm at Penny Dafflos on Twitter. That's Penny like the coin, D-A-F as in Frank, L-O-S as in Sam. And yeah, I'd love to hear people's feedback on this as well, because I know there's a lot of theories and it'd be fun to discuss that on Twitter.
No. Definitely. Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Fringer became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
Transfer complete.